All right, going back on oil, though, here, energy markets are on edge as traders eye whether Russia will curtail production to the West in light of those new Western sanctions. Doing so could have far-reaching implications, especially for those oil-rich Gulf states. Hussein Ibish is a senior resident scholar at Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington and joins us now. Hussein, good to see you here this morning. What could be some of those implications for the Gulf states?
Well, they're all in a difficult situation. In fact, every single country in the Middle East is in an awkward situation of one kind or another. The U.S. allies in the Gulf are facing a situation where some of them, the most important ones of them, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, et cetera, have tried to reach out and build relations with Russia, with China, with countries beyond the U.S., as the U.S. has been perceived as reducing its commitment after the Iraq fiasco. And, you know, they now find themselves kind of trapped. In a sense, they're trying to protect their new relationship with Russia from the fallout of this crisis. But that's going to be very difficult because they're going to come under the same kind of pressure the Israelis felt, where they've been forced to say much more than they wanted to, and now literally forced to support the UN General Assembly resolution. That's going to be very, very awkward when you're trapped between two big powers.
Hussein, it's Brian Chung here. I want to kind of zoom in on the country across on the other side of the Black Sea, that being Turkey. We know that historically they've been allied with Russia in the region, a very important economic linchpin of that particular area. How do you think they factor into the development so far?
I think in the bigger historical picture, they're rivals with Russia. They've been a rival of Russia for many hundreds of years, especially in the Black Sea and the Caucasus, et cetera. So Turkey and Russia, well, they've been allied at times. Most of the time, they've been at loggerheads. They're at loggerheads in the Black Sea, where a Turkish ship was hit by a Russian missile at the beginning of this campaign. They've had very close calls in Syria, where the troops fought a bit on the ground, where the Russian ambassador in Ankara was killed, where there have been a Russian plane was downed by Turkey on the border because of the Syrian war. There's been a lot of tension. So right now, I think of all the Middle Eastern countries, and maybe in a way all the NATO countries, Turkey is really on the front line here. And I think both Turkey and Russia are trying to avoid any intensified confrontation, and which is why both countries played down the fact that a Russian missile hit a Turkish tanker in the Black Sea. But Turkey is hinting that they could, as Ukraine has urged them to, invoke the Montreux Convention and say, no, Russian warships are belligerents fighting in a war, and we therefore are denying them passage in the Dardanelles and the Bosphorus Straits, basically cutting off the main access to the Black Sea. So there is a whole other level of confrontation that could be coming, especially if the war drags on or gets worse.
Hussein, a lot of investors are still looking through this situation through the prism of higher energy prices. So let's say Russia does curtail its production. It's the third largest producer of oil and natural gas in the world. So let's say they do that. How might the Gulf states respond? Would they increase their production to keep prices down, or are they inclined to just keep levels where things are now and let prices skyrocket?
Yeah, I think the second. I think their natural inclination is to stick to their current plan because they negotiated in OPEC plus Russia. They had a little war, not physical, but a kind of a bidding war, pricing war, production war between Saudi Arabia and Russia that the Saudis basically prevailed in. But they finally managed to satisfy all the main producers, UAE, Saudi, and Russia, with a certain production quota and an arrangement. Now, that is a very delicate thing. I don't think they want to risk that. They also have really elaborate plans, especially the Saudis, for shifting investment and for how to develop their economies into a post-oil structure. And they don't want that sort of disrupted. On the other hand, they're going to come under intense pressure from the United States, from Europe, from others to increase production and basically sell their oil at a discount is what it would mean. If they increased production and sold at a lower rate just, you know, to keep the global energy market supplied at a reasonable rate, they'd be getting less per barrel than they should in the long run. So they're going to be asked to take a hit, and they might do that. Qatar is the big alternative for LNG. Its LNG, the liquid natural gas, is mostly dedicated to Asian customers. So really, the West and Qatar would have to kind of convince these Asian companies, countries, to kind of let those supplies be redirected to Europe and to settle with the Asian countries later. That could happen. The Qataris are working on it. They're keen on doing it. But I think the real problem is petroleum pricing. And there, I think, if the war drags on and the confrontation drags on, it's going to be a major issue for these Gulf producers, because they're not going to want to increase their production that much, but the whole world is going to be demanding they do.
And, you know, when you talk about energy and Iran, I kind of want to ask the question, broadly speaking, about just the chatter that we've been hearing, which may have gotten overshadowed by the Russia-Ukraine crisis and might actually be a little bit related to the speed by which perhaps some nations want to get that deal done. But what do you see on that front with the, perhaps a deal going on the nuclear front with Iran?
Well, it's really interesting because the Russians have been playing this critical role of being the positive voice. Because when you've got two people negotiating, if they say anything positive, really positive, it sounds like they're willing to do a deal and they won't be tough on the last remaining issues. So neither the Iranians nor the Americans have been inclined to give the talks momentum by going out in public and making positive comments, lest that be perceived as a willingness to compromise too quickly. The Russians have been doing that, right? And they've been playing a very positive role, at least psychologically and in terms of messaging and perceptions, which is very important in any political circumstance. They might, we don't know how this is going to affect them. It's only been going on for a few days. They might decide that the nuclear talks are really a problem for the West and not for them, and that, well, you know, they're being pressured over Ukraine, they're not inclined to help anybody in Vienna. And we'll see how that happens. But I do think the Iranians also have to be worried that Putin has inadvertently revived the Western alliance, that NATO is back to some extent, that Europe and the United States are on the same page more than they've been in a decade or two, or maybe even two and a half. And that the old forces that used to secure the global order that seemed to be breaking apart during the second Obama term, and especially during the Trump era, is coming back together to confront the Russian aggression. And that's really bad news for Iran and any country that wants to challenge the global order as a matter of sort of strategic goal, which they do.
Hussein Ibish, senior resident scholar at the Arab Gulf States Institute. Really appreciate your insights this morning. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime.